Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet.
You know, I don't gamble. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners. And I can still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into the Bet the Board playoff edition of our lovely NFL podcast powered by Bet Online. Not really sure where the 17 weeks of the regular season have gone. Only 11 games remain on the pro football schedule. We'll be with you every step of the way with a Thursday edition from now until they crown a champion in Santa Clara about a month from now. I'm Todd Furman, and the man who needs no introduction, my faithful co-host and outstanding gambling analyst, Payne Insider. Payne, I want to know if you've officially recovered from your five-day sojourn deep into the heart of Texas.
It was a much-needed trip, that's for sure. It was a good trip. Finally back. I can't believe we're already into the playoffs. And having dealt with you for a full 17 weeks, I deserve some type of award or medal.
Yeah, I mean, 17 weeks, twice a week on the podcast, 5 days in a row in close quarters throughout San Antonio, Dallas. I mean, we shared a lifetime of memories in just those 5 days, watching Alabama annihilate Michigan State and me have a near nervous breakdown from the mezzanine level during the TCU-Oregon Alamo Bowl.
Yeah, it was a good trip. Won a few games. That was a positive. And then obviously we had a couple excursions along the way and a bad beat story that you're going to live a lifetime with. I know you wrote a blog on it. How did you feel about that blog effort?
Yeah, you said you were pretty disappointed in the blog effort. I mean, I wanted a little bit more. We know our loyal listeners say that I pick on you all the time, so this is your open forum to try and take some shots at me.
Well, yeah, I mean, I was expecting a little more. I thought it'd be a little more entertaining. Some of the details were not completely accurate, and kind of the lead up to the game was something I found a little more interesting. So we get into town on the 30th, box seats for Spurs Suns. That went well. We cashed the first half under in that game, and then we're able to watch Louisville on our good early number cash as well. But we go back to the hotel that night. Separate hotel rooms, and this information of Boykin coming down happens around what time? 4, 5, 6 in the morning. And Todd is literally the most active guy in the world, willing to wake up for yoga at like 6 in the morning, but he can't pop his happy ass out of bed, take 12 steps and knock on my door and say, Boykin's going to be suspended for this game. Let's get down on Oregon plus one. He sends me a text message, which I see hours later, so I'm not able to get
hours in. Hours later. Mind you, this is revisionist history that we're going through here. I believe the comment was, I read the text, I rolled over, went back to sleep. Mind you, we were on the road 45 minutes from then, so I can't take full responsibility for you not having a piece of Oregon plus one.
No, and the reality is I like TCU coming into this game initially with Boykin, and then, you know, when you kind of factor in what was going on there, we expected about an 8.5-point adjustment, and that's what we thought we'd see. We saw both those quarterbacks go into Oklahoma, a team that was in the playoffs, and you know, they lost by 1 point, so we thought this was going to be pretty good. Let's fast forward multiple days, and now we're on the 2nd. We're going to the Alamo Dome. In that morning, I'm saying, and we're talking, TCU is going to be the side here. And Todd gets a little more flustered as the day goes on. I know he takes back some of his position. And then later on, we find out that TCU is not only, you know, it's a pretty significant position. It goes to 6.5. Unfortunately, you know, the market couldn't hold with all the Oregon love and the suspension and the injury. But we get into the Alamo Dome, and Todd's out there in the rain. I decided to be, you know, my diva self. I went under the awning while these guys waited in the line at the ticket booth.
Yeah. Mind you, Sam, had you seen this? It's 40 degrees. It's pouring rain. It's pissing down on us. We're waiting in a ridiculous line trying to get funneled in the Alamo Dome. And there's Payne with myself and one of his colleagues. He goes, you know what? I'm going to wait under the overhang. Why don't you two wait in line, and once you get closer, I'm going to come out so I don't get wet.
and here we are. I'm not the one that's sick as we record this on a Thursday. How are you feeling, Todd?
Yeah, you know what? It's nice to have that luxury that we took care of you. If it was up to me, I'd have told you to get your ass to the back of the line. You could have waited there and gotten to the game at one point. Hell, I'd wish I'd left the game at halftime. Would have been a much more profitable afternoon to try and come back with TCU at halftime. Obviously, the 31-point lead could not hold up. I'm sure it's a game that our friend Dave Mason, when he jumps on with us in a few minutes, will tell us may have salvaged the house through a run of favorites and overs. But little to say, a great trip where, no pun intended, a damper was put on it that afternoon at the Alamo Dome.
I had a great day. And the worst part about this day was I wasn't able to cheer every time TCU came back and scored in this game. And I'm watching Todd as TCU adds points to the scoreboard, melting quicker than Frosty the Snowman over there next to me. We're in the Alamo Dome, mind you, and there's no service. This place is an absolute dump. The bathroom is everything you had envisioned it would be. There was urine all over the place. It was a disgusting dump. They should just burn the place down after a game like this. End it on
a good note. It was like Wrigley Field minus the troughs. I mean, that's the best way to put it for people that have been to the cathedral on the north side of Chicago.
Yes, absolutely. That's a great comparison. So, as we're watching this game unfold, I had a feeling that we were going to be in this game when Vernon Adams went down for whatever reason, up 28, they decided to call a run play, and he crumbles pretty quickly there. And at that point, internally, I felt great about the situation if we could get to half 28-7. Unfortunately, it was 31-0, but some good late-game maneuvering there from TCU. They get the two-point conversion after the touchdown. At that point, you know, I'm not a complete savage. I'm rooting for Todd in the middle of his game here and have it fall 31-26. But me being at this game, not being able to cheer with this historic comeback was tough for me. So that's kind of the landscape of this game. And we've kind of seen it throughout the course of bowl season. And even this time of year, all these injuries kind of get overstated. The market inflates, and sometimes the value, as tough as it is on the other side. Although, if Vernon Adams is in this game, Oregon goes box to wire, and it's probably pretty ugly.
And I will say the final bow on that particular spot, I'm still angry at Mark Helfrich for not going for two. You muster one drive the entire second half, and overtime you have a chance to win it with your offense on the field and get out of Dodge alive down 38-37. He elects to kick the extra point, and Oregon had a fate that they deserved given how they performed over the back half of the game. Now, Payne, you talk about injuries and exactly what it meant during bowl season. A major announcement came down the chute on Thursday. The Denver Broncos electing to name Peyton Manning their starter for the divisional round of playoffs. Are you at all surprised by this decision from Gary Kubiak, or that he announced it as early as he did?
Not at all surprised. When you make that move in the third quarter, that's where you're going to go moving forward. And when you look at this, I don't get it. I really don't. We're looking at Peyton Manning, and I guess you could use the NASCAR analogy. He's been out 2 months. The arm is rested. We know that's the weakness. He's got another week to prep. Off the bye week, then you have 2 weeks, and you're hoping that you can just get to the end of the finish line on short gas, and that you'll get the bye week before the Super Bowl if you get there. But Brock Osweiler, there's just no chance that Peyton Manning comes back from a 14-point deficit and, you know, win some of these games. The Monday night game against Cincinnati, there's no way he hangs 27 points of offense in the first half against Pittsburgh. There's no way he comes back and beats the Patriots in cold weather and snow at home. He wasn't able to do that in his prime. He wasn't going to be able to do it at the end of this year. So I didn't get the move. I really don't. And so that's my only feeling, is they're hoping that at this point in the season, the arm's rested, there's going to be potentially a couple bye weeks, and there's enough gas in the tank for three games. And that's the only thing you can really look at here.
It'll be very interesting to see where that market opens when Denver knows their opponent for what will be the fourth and final game of the divisional round next Sunday afternoon. And Payne, as we always know, at the end of the regular season leads to a lot of change in personnel, not obviously player personnel sometimes, but coaching staff. We saw Lovie Smith, the latest casualty yesterday, out as head coach of the Buccaneers. Any of the resignations, firings, or in the case of the Indianapolis Colts, the re-signing of Chuck Pagano come as a surprise to you?
I think that right there is the largest surprise. Chuck Pagano coming back, him and the GM basically knowing both their jobs are on the line, Irsay wanting a kumbaya package deal, so they kind of had to come together, pretend like they're friends, and hopefully they earned themselves, and they did, they earned themselves a couple extra years in their gig, so we'll see how that pans out, that's the largest surprise, especially when, you know, the rumblings were that if Pagano was out, who would assume that role as head coach of the Colts coming from the college ranks, a very, very big name, and potentially Nick Saban. So that was the surprise. The other coaches being fired, I don't think any of that's a surprise. I really don't. Even Lovie Smith, that's not a total shocker to me at all. I fully expected that, and I was shocked it didn't happen Monday. And I think that's probably the glaring issue when you talk about these franchises. Having him come out for that end-of-season presser and not actually having him canned on Monday is just very bad business. It's clueless business. It kind of shows the potential candidates coming in that you don't know how to properly run an organization and treat your employees. And that forces you, in the long run, to overpay, and you're going to lose out on situations where potential candidates think that, you know, it's 50-50. They're going to go to the better-run organization, and that's why you have to end up overpaying for guys. So it'll be interesting to see where the Bucks go from here. I think they go in-house with Dirk Cutter. I know he'd been taking some interviews. They like Dirk Cutter. They like his relationship with Winston, and they thought potentially they could lose him to another coaching situation. So that's, I think, why this was pressed into motion pretty early.
Amazing to think Dirk Cutter could be the head coach of an NFL team, a man who struggled mightily at the highest levels of Division I college football, but clearly the two games, not always an apples-to-apples comparison. So we talk about some of the coaches, and obviously you mentioned Chuck Pagano being a little bit of a surprise there. Teams that are players that really surprise you. I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, but maybe one surprise in a positive manner and one real disappointment through the NFL regular season.
I think it's really easy. I think you look at the Arizona Cardinals. We talked about this team at 8.5 wins set early in the season. I was shocked to see it that low, but when you looked at the potential schedule, you looked at the rest of the division, we thought the Rams would be a little better. We thought there wouldn't be a huge drop-off with Seattle like there was early on in the season. So that was huge. And Carson Palmer, what a pleasant surprise. There was really question marks how he would respond off the knee surgery. He was lights out this season when you look at it as a whole. So this is an Arizona team that I thought was a pleasant surprise. I love Bruce Arians. He puts his players in positions to succeed each and every single week. The game plan is awesome. They have a aggressive nature, and everybody believes next man up role. So we really see what a well-run organization it is with Bruce Arians at head coach. So that would be, I think, far and away a team that surprised me, especially when you looked at that market at 8.5 win total. Disappointment, obviously, right here in my backyard with the Miami Dolphins. Now, I did not expect them to be a team that was going to win 10, 11 games as some of the math guys expected and projected as a team that had no depth. But as we saw, it's just a dysfunctional organization. And if it wasn't for teams like the Browns, like the Titans, this might be one of the probably the most dysfunctional organization in the NFL. It's like that Seinfeld reference with George Costanza and Pigmen. Suddenly, if there's a few of these Pigmen running around, I don't look so bad. And so fortunately for the Dolphins, the Browns are still in the NFL. And so they're not the most dysfunctional team, but they're right up there.
Yeah, I was going to say, I didn't think we were going to get a Pigman reference there out of Seinfeld, Dot. Nicely played. And we talk about surprise and disappointments all the time, and Black Monday, obviously. A man who we think is gainfully employed, Dave Mason from Bet Online. You can follow him on Twitter, at Dave Mason, B-O-L. Dave, how have the last 2 weeks of the regular season treat you guys? And more importantly, a happy and healthy New Year. It feels like an eternity since Payne and I have had you on the pod.
Yeah, man, I missed it. But no, the last 2 weeks of the regular season, they were pretty good. December started off. The players are definitely having a profitable December with the NFL, and but we closed out December with a good weekend 2 weeks ago, and then started off January. Good last weekend. You know, the bowls, those bowls, we had a tough stretch there. But as you guys mentioned, the Alamo Bowl, TCU really saved our hide last Saturday with that comeback, and double nice that the middle didn't hit. So, yeah.
Thanks for throwing salt in that wound, Dave. Thanks for throwing salt in that wound, buddy. I appreciate it.
Well, I'm in the same position, pal. Probably not as much money you had on it, but I'm in the same position on that one. I wasn't thinking that at all. So, it happens.
Dave, as we transition to the NFL, we know a lot of bettors, they like to bet a little to win a lot. And they do that sometimes with the futures market. Is there any huge liabilities out there, whether sharp or public, that are creating a doomsday scenario for your sports book if they were to go on and win the Super Bowl?
Right. Now, our guys, I just went over the numbers yesterday with the props team who manages those, and they did a real good job managing these. I mean, we have one big exposure, and that's it, and that's the Steelers. They win it all. We get hammered pretty good on that. Texans is a small exposure, but everything else in the black, you know, Cincy, Panthers, and Seahawks are real big winners. Everybody else is a moderate to decent sized winner. They did a real good job managing those. Kudos to them. So it's Steelers versus everybody, pretty much.
It can always be a challenge this time of year. I know there are a handful of books out here in Vegas that weren't as quick in moving Kansas City's number down as they needed to once KC started 1-5. So that's good to hear that you guys are in good shape if the Chiefs' right. Cinderella run continues. Dave, wanted to get your thoughts on an opening line. We know that BetOnline is first in the market. You guys aren't shy about hanging numbers before everybody else comes up with them. Noticed a game spread on the Seattle-Minnesota. You guys elected to use the Seahawks as 2.5-point road favorites. Saw that number climb as high as 6. Of course, as I look at BetOnline's current price, we see it settling right in the middle at 4. Obviously, the totals come down a bit. Is there a lot of liability, or can you walk us through the thought process why you guys thought to use such a low number on the Seahawks, given how public a team they may be and their dismantling of the Vikings just a few short weeks ago?
Right. Yeah, I mean, like you said, we pride ourselves in hanging those numbers quick, and something when you do so, you're going to be off sometimes, you know what I mean? So yeah, it was a bad number. We just hung a bad number. We kept it under a field goal, and luckily our guys, because we do this, because we're so aggressive hanging our numbers so quick, I mean, we're not just hanging it and then checking in the next day to see what happens, or waiting for other books to see what they do. You know, just to kind of show you what happens, they hang it, and there's a ticker of all the bets coming in, and, you know, 90% of the bets are just the public stuff or even higher. But, you know, those bets coming in highlighted red are from respected bettors, sharps, or just, you know, guys we respect. And, you know, those start coming in, you're moving a line real quick. So, I mean, it went up above a field goal within 2 minutes, I think. Then it went up to 5 within 4 or 5 minutes. So did we take some bets? Yep, we sure did. But, you know, 99% of the people aren't even logging in on to take advantage of those early lines. You know, I always stress, hey, check them out, because you're going to get value like this. You know, when you're doing it for basketball, football, baseball, hockey, there's not a day goes by where we're posting the odds that aren't off by a little bit, and that's a prime example. Now, it sucks when it's such a huge game. You know, we prefer it if it's some hockey game, but
no shot.
Yeah, that was another jab at you. That's right.
Tough podcast for me this morning, man. Tough podcast.
We shot it up quick. You know, we're keeping tabs on the sharp money coming in, and it went up, and now it's coming back down a little bit to 4. Of course, it's not going to go below 3 again, but it happens, you know. It happens.
And, Dave, when we talk about the rest of the wild card weekend and the 4 big games, you seeing anything in terms of volume, sharp money coming in, any big decisions for the book this week so far?
Yeah, well, all 4 games look like they're going to be a big decision there. The Chiefs, 77% of the money's on the Chiefs. The Seahawks, 83% of the bets are on the Seahawks, but 62% of the money. So that was a little bit surprised by that, especially considering, you know, how we opened that number. We did take a little bit of sharp action on the Vikings when it went up to 6. Steelers, Bengals, 80% of the money's on the Steelers. And the last game, the Packers, Redskins, while 56% of the bets are on the Skins, 80% of the money is on the Packers, and that has to do with some sharp action that came in as the Packers were +1. So, additional sharp action. What else we got? There was some under 41 on the Chiefs Texans. That's now 40. And with the weather, some people hit the Vikings under.
That's yeah, I found that, I found some of that strength of the under move a little bit surprising. Seattle, Minnesota, of course, Payne and I will get to that in a little bit more detail once we let you go, Dave. As we all know, the biggest game of the weekend, not probably taking place in the NFL, but on Monday between Alabama and Clemson. While this isn't a college football podcast, I was interested to get your take on what kind of betting trends you guys have seen emerge there between two college football powers.
Yeah, we'll definitely be Clemson fans on Monday night. before pounding Alabama. 80% of the money is on Alabama right now at 6.5. So we'll be exposed a little bit on the money line, on the Clemson money line. So perfect scenario for the house would be the Bama winning but not covering. So that would be the perfect scenario. But, of course, then all the teasers will hit. So, you know, it's one of those things like you want this to happen but not that to happen. But this to happen, there's rarely any kind of perfect scenario. You know, you win the spread but you give up the teasers and you give up the money line, but you win the money line. And so – you know, I try to keep it simple without get so I don't get a headache. So, you know, 80% of money's on Alabama currently -6.5.
Always caught between a rock and a hard place this year, but with 11 meaningful NFL games remaining and two college football games, don't want to neglect the FCS championship that'll take place on Saturday. What can our loyal listeners expect as far as some generous playoff promotions available at BetOnline?
Right, we still have that bonus for a loyal Bet the Board listeners. Newbies that don't have a BetOnline account, go over there and sign up at BetOnline.ag. Use promo code BTB50 for a 50% bonus. If you already have a BetOnline account but you're ready for a reload, use BTB30 for a 30% reload bonus. Both of those bonuses max out at $1,000 worth of free plays. If you're looking for the terms and conditions and other details, go to www.betonline.ag/bet the board.
Dave, want to thank you as always for your time. I know how busy it is down there at the shop this time of year, and we'll have you back each and every Thursday from now, like we said, until we know who the next Super Bowl champ is. We missed you the last couple weeks, and for folks who want to follow Dave on Twitter, I encourage you to do so at Dave Mason, B-O-L. Thanks as always, and best of luck this weekend, Dave.
All right, guys. Have a great weekend.
Dave Mason, betonline.ag. Payne, I know, like we said, this is an NFL podcast. You were all surprised by the bet splits early on for that college football national championship that Dave mentioned?
No, not at all. And as I'm sitting there, and we're sitting there in the box in Jerry's World watching this, that line came out, I believe it was as low as 4, 4.5, and as Bama piles on each touchdown, the spread continues to increase. Dave alluded to 80% of the tickets being on Alabama at this point so far. The book's still willing to go to 6.5 off that key number, which makes things quite interesting.
Yeah, there looks like there is a little bit of sharp money out there circulating on the Clemson Tigers. I think, as we talked about TCU, Oregon, it'll be very difficult for Shop sitting at 6.5 as we record here Thursday morning to hold that position without going to 7 and maybe even see some 7.5 at the books known to cater to recreational customers. But before we get there, 4 big NFL playoff games to get to. We may as well go in chronological and rotation order. Let's start in Houston, where Kansas City is a 3-point road favorite at Bet Online. You do have to lay $1.30 if you want to back the Chiefs. Total on this game sits at 40. I guess the first question I have for you, Payne, are you buying the Chiefs during this 10-game win streak, a stretch where they've only outgained their opponents by 11 yards per game?
It's tough for me too. I know the guys that have futures and on the Chiefs, and I know they really like this team, but this is one game that I really, really tried to break down and make a case, but it's tough for me to do so. But when you look at this Chiefs team, and we kind of talked about this a few weeks ago, and now it's expanded to a 10-game win streak. They've beaten just two teams with winning records. The first was at home against the Steelers team versus Landry Jones. The second was on the road at Denver, but that was against Manning, who was playing with an injury, and he ended up being out nearly 2 months. So we know those two wins. The other 8 opponents during that 10-game win streak have a combined record of 45 wins and 83 losses. 45-83. And if you actually look at the last 6 games of the regular season, Kansas City has been outgained by an average of 25 yards per game. So I'm not as high on the Chiefs as some guys are. That is for sure.
Okay, I'll ask you on the flip side then. Are you as high on the Texans then, given their resurgence defensively? We know they had a major loss on their offensive line, Dwayne Brown at right tackle, who won't be with the squad. But you watch Brian Hoyer. He's avoided costly turnovers, preventing short fields that plagued them early in the year. But do we buy the Houston Texans at this point in the year?
You know, you look at the last 3 wins in the season, Colts, Titans, Jaguars, it certainly doesn't leave you brimming with confidence. The Dwayne Brown injury, I hate it. This was a Texans offense that got the ground game going the last 6 weeks of the season. They averaged about 140 yards on the ground per game. If you back out some of the late game QB kneels and you back out some of the ridiculous fails of O'Brien's Wildcat versus the Patriots, and when they acquired B.J. Daniels, they used him in the Titans game in that capacity as well. The yards per attempt is very good, too. The Chiefs right now, they're tied for 18th in the NFL in yards per rush allowed. But when you look at run-stopping metrics adjusted for their opponents, this is one of the worst run-stopping NFL teams. When you factor in the NFC West, they play the Chargers twice, dead last in rushing. They face the Raiders twice. They're in the lower 20 percentile. And then you have the inconsistent Denver rushing attack, who ended finishing around the middle of the pack after some huge games. But this is a Chiefs team, to me, when you look at those numbers, has a tough time stopping the run. So the Texans will have to keep that ground game going. It looks like they're going to the hot hand, whether it be Polk, whether it be Akeem, whether it be Blue, whether, you know, whoever, whether it's Grimes. They just seem to go to the hot hand, and it's really been working for them the last, you know, month, 6 weeks of the season.
Justin Houston back in the fold for Kansas City. We know he missed the last five games, the team's leader in sacks. Not sure if he'll be at 100%. How much does that change the handicap for what this Kansas City defense can do moving forward?
I think when you look at some of the defensive injuries on both sides of the ball, you know, Houston practiced this week. That's a huge get, obviously. You look at J.J. Watt, too. The cast came off the hand last week. He looked like a brand new man. And when you kind of listen to what Dave said, there was some under money, came in at 41. That's a key number. Dwayne Brown out again on the offensive line for Houston. So this line is extremely tight. But gun to head, I think you probably have to make a case for the under. I know we like the first half unders in general. I'm not sure I would go that route, but I think gun to head, you look under. When you look at this, I think both defensive lines have a huge edge. Chiefs offensive line, they're ranked 28th in pass protection efficiency. The Texans defensive line, 6th in pass rush efficiency. The Chiefs, without Houston for a pretty good portion of the season, still 4th in defensive pass rush efficiency. The Texans were just 17th, and that will probably decline a bit with Dwayne Brown out on that offensive line. The one thing that does scare me a little bit when you look at potentially a first half under, one thing we know about Andy Reid is 9 times out of 10, he will have a very, very good game plan coming into each game. And where Reid's shortcomings have been is the in-game decisions and the adjustments. And I wanted to look at this one specific thing as I was trying to make a case for the first half under, and it's the Chiefs. They're 4th in the NFL in first half scoring. They drop to about the middle of the pack in overall scoring this season. That difference is even more pronounced the last 3 weeks of the season, where KC averaged nearly 18.5 points per game in the first half, number 2 in the NFL, and less than a touchdown in the second half at 6.4 points. When you look at just the last month of the season, the last 4 games, the Chiefs have 1 offensive touchdown in the second half, and that's a possession that started at their own 47. So the key here, and that's necessarily why I'm not completely looking first half under as we usually do with a lot of these totals. And now that I've missed the 41 on the full game, it becomes extremely tight. And I think this is kind of going to be what we hear this entire podcast is. Things did not align how we would have liked them in the wild card weekend. If we were able to get Seattle trekking up to Lambeau Field, that might be my biggest bet of the entire NFL season and probably biggest bet in a few years. It just didn't unfold this weekend. There's not a ton of value out there, in my opinion, this weekend. But this line is very tight, gun to head, potentially looking under. Again, the only thing that scares me here is the Texans' tempo. They're much faster than Kansas City is.
And you mentioned the Chiefs' inability to score in the second half, something we saw the first time these two teams met earlier this year in Week 1, where Kansas City took a 20-7-9 lead into the half, did not put up a single point in the second half, still was able to win comfortably 27-20. Before we close the book pane on this game, I'll ask you about the number. 3 minus $1.30, clearly trending towards 3.5, given the huge public support we've seen on Kansas City. How high does this number go? Do we think we start to see resistance from some of the sharp guys if it gets to 4, maybe even 4.5, which I know feels like a long shot, but this is the time of year you and I always talk about. The public does have their say in a betting market.
Yeah, and it's also the one wild card weekend where we always talk about getting the best of the number, but this wild card weekend and these short prices, it's just find the winner, I believe, since 1978 in the wild card weekend. If you just pick the winner, they cover the spread 88-89% of the time. So as much as we encourage you to get the best of the number, this is kind of a weekend where you just find the winner. And I know there are going to be some sharp guys in Kansas City, and I think there'll be some sharp guys on Houston. I really do. I think this is a game that's going to be extremely tough to gauge. At 3.5, the picture's a little different. At 4, the picture is much, much different. And at that number, potentially gets me, you know, to look at Houston at 4.
Well, two teams that have only met once this season to the nightcap, where these teams, no strangers to one another for the second straight year. Pittsburgh meets a divisional rival in the wild card round. We're looking at the Steelers, a 3-point road favorite for their trip to Cincinnati. Lay a nickel there. Lay $1.15 if you want to back the Bengals at Bet Online. Total in this one, 45.5. I guess we may as well start with the quarterback dilemma. When you're handicapping this game and you see the Bengals listed as a 3-point dog with A.J. McCarron, first off, is Andy Dalton safe to say that we're talking about this game at a pick'em? And do you see value in both scenarios? Kind of wanted to get your thought process on that. I know a lot of our listeners had questions through social media on the same topic.
Yeah, this is one of the tougher games for me. As good as McCarron's overall, you know, body of work since he's been starting is, there are some points in his game that are going to need some help. And so I've cooled a little bit as I've done some digging. The last few weeks he hasn't been great. We talked about the very early script in the Denver game and how he's effective there, but past that script he wasn't very good. Last week started extremely slow, wasn't great overall, and that was against one of the weaker secondaries in the NFL in Baltimore. When you look at this game, in the earlier matchup, we were all over Pittsburgh. But when you look at this line, to me, and again, I think I'd probably rather have A.J. McCarron in catching 3, and we'll see how high this goes, as opposed to Dalton in there and potentially being in that -1, 1.5 range. I really do. I don't think there is a 4, 4.5 point adjustment between these two quarterbacks, especially when you're involving the 3. So for me, you know, I'd like to see this get up as high as humanly possible.
Yeah, and I'm interested to see where this number ends up going. I mean, we saw it open at 3 at some shops, 2.5 -20, continues to trend in that direction. I'll make the case it might be the highest volume bet game in that Saturday night primetime slot. The Steelers, of course, coming into this one with some concerns at running back. It appears by all accounts that D'Angelo Williams expected to miss. Fitz Toussaint will assume the responsibilities. It was the exact same spot Pittsburgh was in a year ago, and we saw them, you know, kind of go all aerial all the time, only ran the ball 19 times for 68 yards against the Ravens. Do we trust Big Ben and his talented trio of wide receivers here?
I think that's the question. Can the Steelers overcome D'Angelo Williams? And when you look at this, it's a small sample size, but there has been a sample of this Pittsburgh team losing backs late in the season and losing that first-round game with Tomlin at head coach. In 2007, Tomlin's first year, Willie Parker goes down. Big Ben can't do enough to win that opening-round playoff game. 2011, Mendenhall goes down. And I think, if everyone remembers, Isaac Redmond showed very, very well at Denver, but again, it was another game they dropped. And then most recently last year, Le'Veon Bell goes down late in the season, and they lose to Baltimore in that first round. So Tomlin and his loss of running backs late in the season has not bode well in the playoffs in the first round, so that's something you want to look at. The other factor here is Toussaint is not very good. This is a practice squad guy, and when you look at the potential for weather, I know we're going to talk about a later game and everybody wants to talk about how cold it is, but let's talk about this game here, and it has a potential for about a 12 to 15 mile per hour crosswind, and you're looking at the potential as it stands right now. We're not weathermen, but they're calling for about an 80% chance of rain. So if you're not able to establish a ground game in that type of weather, it could be another edge to Cincinnati.
And this is the Bengals defense that's only allowed one team to go over the century mark. That was the Denver Broncos in their last 9 games. So clearly they've been stout against the run. Their pass defense can be beat, but they haven't given up gaudy numbers. Arizona, the only team to eclipse 300 yards since week 4 early in the season, and we know that's through 2 meetings against the Steelers. When we look at these two teams on the defensive side, Payne, either one of them have a major edge for you. I know I've been extremely critical of Pittsburgh, especially given how they finished the regular season. I didn't think their effort against Cleveland was very good, or the week before against Baltimore. I still believe that the Steelers defense will end up being their Achilles heel more than having a viable running back.
Yeah, absolutely. And we talk about with A.J. McCarron and how much that Bengals defense has stepped up over the last month or so. And on the flip side, this Pittsburgh defense, I know what the metrics will say. I know what the efficiency numbers will say, that they're an above-average defense. And that might be the case when you're looking at their front four, their front seven. But the Bengals have one of the best offensive lines in football. So I think that's a bit negated in the key here is if the weather is good, A.J. McCarron is going to have to make some plays in the passing game against the Steelers secondary, which I think is one of the worst in the NFL. So A.J. McCarron with a fantastic script early and some great play calling from Hugh Jackson, can they do enough in the passing game against this bad Steelers secondary? That'll be the key in this if the weather is good. And we'll see how hot Hugh Jackson becomes a commodity if he's able to take A.J. McCarron and win this game.
I don't want to go too far off the rails here because I know typically we look for first-half unders, but can you make the case, knowing how strong Cincinnati has been scripting plays, that the Bengals could make a compelling first-half angle and give the edge to Pittsburgh with halftime adjustments that the Steelers will be able to come back?
You know, it's nothing that I've really dug into that deeply. You did nail the script head-on, and we've kind of talked about it for a few weeks. But, and I know A.J. McCarron, again, we've talked about this, has been in big games at Alabama late in this year, but this is kind of a little different beast. You're getting a start for your first playoff game. I'm not sure that makes me feel overly comfortable going first half with, you know, even with the script. So it's nothing that I'm considering at this point. I think I'm going to let this creep out a little bit. And if it creeps past the key, then obviously I'm going to be looking at the Bengals here at 3. You know, I think it might be worth a value bet. Still some more digging that I have to do. Again, this weekend is just holy hell. I just don't love any of the games here, and I think there was the potential for some great, great matchups if things unfolded differently in Week 17.
An interesting note on a trend that applies, a scenario that doesn't unfold all that often. Playoff home dogs stand 9-3-1 against the number when they enter a game against an opponent with a better record. So folks who like to basically say trends are meaningless, I think this just talks more about public perception and what the market's doing to try and reflect some of that bias that's out there. From Saturday's AFC clashes to Sunday, that'll be dominated by the NFC. You mentioned how we were both hoping that Seattle was going to be headed to Lambeau to take on the Packers. Our wish did not come to fruition. Instead, they go further north to TFC Bank Stadium to take on the Vikings, a game where Seattle's a 4-point favorite at BetOnline, total at 39.5. We've seen some under money come in. And let's start with the question that everyone wants to talk about, not the revenge, not Seattle getting back to the Super Bowl, but the weather forecast, where it looks to be extremely frigid in the Twin Cities.
Yeah, and I think, you know, when you talk about the cold weather, what you're going to see and the biggest impact it does have is in the kicking game. The ball becomes a rock, and sometimes those field goals that you're looking at in the, you know, 48, 49, 50-yard range become much more difficult when you're kicking a hard ball. Sometimes it could potentially swing things when you talk about, you know, a kicker like Blair Walsh or Hauschka, who have great legs and can kick from deep. If you're in that 52, 53, 54-yard range, as opposed to putting 3 on the board or the alternative of missing it and having your opponent start with great field position, if that ball is hard and it's this cold, you're looking at a potential situation where they're not attempting the field goal, where they're playing punt and pin, and that affects the total dramatically. The other thing, when we see a hard ball, it gets a little slick, so you have the potential for fumbles. And we know that AP the last few weeks has treated that football like a hot potato. On the flip side, we know Marshawn Lynch has a great track record with holding on to the ball, but he hasn't been hit. And so that could affect some things as well when you talk about that cold weather and what it does to the pigskin.
Yeah, and you mentioned Lynch. What do you think realistically the Seahawks can expect, and how much different does their offense look? I know I've spoken to a few people who are afraid that Seattle may become much more reliant on the ground game. They found something in a high-flying passing attack, but much different in the elements than it was in the climate-controlled environment we saw last weekend in their dominating victory against the Arizona Cardinals.
Yeah, we talked about this Seattle team and how we had them ranked, probably 2 months ago in this, 10-12 range in overall team efficiency. But when you look at what they've done, what you look at Russell Wilson has done, it's been extraordinary. And with Rawls out, we thought that they would take a step back. They did in the Rams game last week. You know, it's week 17. Some teams cared a little bit more than others. But overall, this offense, I think, needs Marshawn Lynch for the playoffs. If all the indications and reports are true, if Marshawn Lynch is playing, he's going to get carries. He's going to get 20 touches, I would assume. And we've talked about potentially him being in the greatest shape of his life. He's been out there on his own working out 8 to 10 hours a day. He came back in early this week, and the reports were he was in the best shape of his life. So this will be an interesting addition to the offense. We've talked about Tyler Lockett being implemented more into the offense as a whole, and I think that's been a welcome addition. Once Jimmy Graham went down, they needed that next target, and I think he's kind of taken a huge burden off that offense. Obviously, Baldwin's been fantastic. But this offense has been humming. And Russ Wilson, we talk about him, and I know a lot of people don't think he's a pocket passer, but he's proving those naysayers wrong. One of the most efficient quarterbacks in the pocket this year. He has been outstanding. In this offense, you saw it after their bye week. They really tuned things up a little bit. They started playing a little faster. They started passing the ball a little bit more. And since that bye week, the offense has been red hot.
Yeah, clearly Seattle firing on all cylinders, aside from the minor blip against the St. Louis Rams, who have had Seattle's number for whatever reason. Payne, wanted to ask you about this number and total, obviously. Public perception versus proper valuation. How much does that play into this price? Ping pong all over. We spoke to Dave. He said they opened at 2.5, which I think, I'm shocked, to be completely honest, that they open below a field goal. Worst case scenario, you open at 3 and allow the public to drive it up. We've seen some resistance from some of the sharp guys out there at 6. But the total 42.5 down to 39.5 feels like a pretty big move. And in the past, at least recently, we've seen totals in the 30s in the NFL playoffs actually go 9-5 to the over when they've been installed so low.
Yeah, this is really a difficult game to handicap because we were on Seattle in this matchup, about a month ago. Huge. And, that got to the window pretty easily. And I know the market's adjusted. And I'm not running to bet Seattle here. But I don't think when you look at this, I guess people will look at this and say, how could you lay 4 now? You could have had pick, a couple weeks ago. Well, that line closed 3. So we're now looking at some 4s out there in the market, and I know it's a key number, but when you're going from 3 to 4 and you're making the case of just pick the winner here, it makes it tough for me to want to back Minnesota in this spot. And I think this is a side where we've seen obviously some sharp money at 6, and we're going to get that level of bettor who wants to be sharp, and they're going to look at Minnesota in this game. And I know how good Seattle looked last week. It certainly hurt the market price for this game. But for me, I can't be on Minnesota here. I really can't. I don't like what Teddy Bridgewater has done outdoors. Now you're talking about this inclement weather. I think Seattle, with Marshawn Lynch back, the one Achilles heel is being able to stop the run for the Vikings. They haven't been able to do it. And if you can get Marshawn Lynch going, I think this game is definitely siding towards Seattle. This Vikings defense, yes, they get healthy. They get Barr back. They get Harrison Smith back. Those guys are going to be obviously vital. But this game, I can't make a case for the Vikings. I really cannot. And I know there are a ton of sharp guys on this game on that side, but I'm not going to be one of them.
And you can add me to that list. I want no part of the home dog here. You mentioned some of Teddy Bridgewater's struggles in weather. Teams only average 183 yards per game passing. That's clearly not as balanced as they'd like to be. And for me at this game, if I can get a 17.5, I think it might be a bit aggressive. I'll look to go under with the Vikings team total. I just don't think Minnesota can score enough points against a Seattle team that may force the Purple to be playing from behind most of the afternoon. We look at their effort last Sunday night against Green Bay on the road. Only mustered 13 points with their offense. Seven of those came on a scoop and score, so the 20-point outburst, so to speak, a little bit misleading.
Very predictable. I mean, we talk about Norv Turner all the time. I thought this is a guy that should be selling flowers on the side of the road when he was at San Diego. And everything he does as a play caller, and maybe I'll be wrong this week, maybe this, you know, maybe he'll change it up, but he is just too vanilla, runs too much on first down, and this isn't the kind of defense that you're going to be able to beat if they know what you're doing. It's going to be interesting to see if Peterson cannot get going, and I don't think he is going to be able to if Norv Turner continues to call the game how he's been calling it this season. Just too much run on first down. And that, I can't do it. I mean, it's interesting when we talk about these games. It really is, because we get great information and we know who's on this, and I just can't do it. So this is a game that I'm going to be off of, but you may, not to go too far back, but this total is interesting. We talked about it a little bit. My number on this total was 43, and there are a lot of guys who have it much higher than that. So it'll be interesting to see how low this gets before we see some over money in the market.
Yeah, I mean, I won't claim to have a number that high at 43, but when we talked about it, I said my number was 42. I thought the opener was perfect. I was a little bit surprised to see it just because of the cold. We talk about totals all the time. Wind plays a much bigger role than just the cold. Of course, the kicking game is impacted, but I think you can create a little bit of value, especially if Seattle grabs a lead. Final game of Wild Card Weekend sees the Green Bay Packers on the road against the surprising Redskins, that same Redskins team who won all of four games a season ago. Interesting trend here, Payne. Playoff teams who won four or fewer games the previous season, 2-15 straight up, 1-16 against the spread. That comes from Mark Lawrence. And you look at these two teams, difference in strength is schedule. Washington, who have they beaten this year? Kirk Cousins. I'm not going to take anything away from his emergence. Completion percentage outstanding. And you've seen a underrated trio of receivers in Jordan Reed, Pierre Garçon, Jamison Crowder in the fold, and, of course, DeSean Jackson. Washington scoring and scoring at will. I guess, first off, was this the right opener at pick? Are we surprised by the move to Green Bay? And how do we try and evaluate the schedules that these two teams have had to go through amid the Packers' struggles late in the season?
Yeah, I think the first question is difference in strength of schedule. You look at that, it is a little bit concerning. It is something that you have to completely factor in. It's partly why we've seen this potential move. And then, obviously, you know, experience. You know, Kirk Cousins, Gruden versus, you know, McCarthy and Rodgers. And that's why you're going to see that in addition to the strength of schedule. I think this was a good number. I really do. I think this was a good number. You open a pick'em, let the bettors kind of dictate where this is going to go. Don't get beat up too much. I know somebody said that they thought Green Bay would be favored by 3. I mean, that's, you know, that's just ridiculous. And if Washington opened 2.5, that's a pretty strong bookmaker number. And it kind of lets you know that Washington would be the side here. But I think, along with a lot of the sharp bettors, they're not really sure what the right number is here. And so you open a pick, let the market dictate where you're going to go. And we have seen early sharp money on Green Bay. They took +1. You're now looking at a 1-point dog most places. But I just don't – the totals come down a little bit. This is just a really tough game for me to gauge because Green Bay's offense has been so bad of late. Yes, a lot of their struggles have come in the red zone. They've gotten to the red zone pretty frequently during this bad offensive stretch, and they just haven't been able to convert for touchdowns. There's been some costly turnovers, especially when you factor in that Raiders game, a lot of turnovers in that red zone. So this is just one of the tougher games for me, again, to handicap. When you're looking at this game, open 47, some places down to 45, This is an interesting total for me because I start to see some value if this ticks below the 45 and potentially going over. This Washington team has had trouble stopping the run. And Eddie Lacy, if he can get going, the offense becomes a little different for Green Bay. If they get that ground game going, which I think they should be able to, this Washington run defense is just dreadful. That's going to create some opportunities. When you look at Washington, this is a team that likes to pass the ball. They haven't been able to run it effectively. Gruden and Kirk Cousins have been chucking it all over the park. So if Green Bay can get out, this game is going to fly over. That's just the question. Can Green Bay get out a little bit? So at 44.5, I'd be intrigued to look over in this game, but we'll see if it comes to fruition.
And you mentioned 44.5. It was out there for a few fleeting moments at a couple of other offshore books. Clearly that was gobbled up in the market. It's 45 largely. We know it's 45 right now at BetOnline. The final thing on this campaign, wanted to get your thoughts. Obviously, we talk about it all the time, especially this late in the year in the postseason. Public perception plays such a role. How much does how the Redskins finish the year versus the last we've seen of the Packers, 4-6 straight up, 4-6 against the spread? I actually had a kid on Twitter asked me a pretty good question. You know, what kind of odds could you have gotten that the Packers get swept at Lambeau in all of their division games this year and still make the playoffs? You know, what is that doing to these numbers that when we look at Green Bay, it may be one and done, or maybe the Packers can steal this one in the nation's capital and go on to try and right the ship?
Yeah, I think some of the luster is clearly worn off the Packers, and for sharp bettors, that was long ago. But for the public, especially when you get it on a national TV, you know, in front of your eyes last Sunday night, you know, it hits them finally. And now you're looking at bet splits right now pretty much across the board, 50-50. So some of that luster is worn off from the public perception on the Packers, and that's why you're going to open here. You know, if this game's played a few weeks back, certainly Washington's probably a dog in this situation. And that's one thing. It's not anything to go to your grave with, but when we talk about these teams playing in primetime spots, looking horrible one week or looking great one week, the opposite usually happens the following week. It just tends to be the case. The one interesting thing that I did uncover in this game, and it kind of slightly gives a decent talking point to the Redskins. If you go back 2013, Gruden was with the Bengals, and they faced this Packers defense with the same defensive coordinator, the same key players, all the same coaches. It was with Andy Dalton, and they hung 30 on this defense of Green Bay. So I think that's one thing that you have to look at here. There could, again, be some potential for weather. That's something that you're going to absolutely have to look at here. But again, I think it makes another case to potentially look over here. But other than that, just not a ton for me on this game. I think that was the perfect number. If I could have got Washington plus 3, you know, I'm running to the window naked trying to get as much of it as possible. So, you know, that just didn't happen to be the case this week.
Well, for most of America, we're thankful then that the Redskins didn't open plus 3 because no one wants to see Payne and Sider running to the window naked. It's a visual that would haunt everyone's dreams moving forward in this 2016.
Yeah, yeah. Whatever you say, kid.
Four big games this weekend. Hopefully folks find plenty of value. We've given you everything and anything we've uncovered as we sit here and record on Thursday. If you haven't already subscribed to the Bet the Board podcast at this late juncture in the season, make sure you do so. iTunes, SoundCloud, and visit us at toddstake.com. Recording schedule will probably remain the same. Looking to record at around 11 o'clock Eastern on Thursdays, meaning the podcast gets up about 90 minutes later, gives people plenty of time to digest our great content headed into the Saturday and Sunday games. But Payne, before we bid our listeners a fond farewell until we reconvene, any words of wisdom? I feel like we've covered pretty much everything we possibly could for these eight teams that'll be in action during Wildcard Weekend.
Yeah, there's just not a lot out there. I really don't think, you know, there's much value on the board right now. Again, I think probably Cincinnati makes a decent look at 3. You know, we'll wait a little bit to see how high that gets. But aside from that, there's just not a ton of value out there. I personally have not bet a single thing as you know, at the time of recording this. So it certainly makes it tougher for me to tell anybody to bet anything, bet any of their hard-earned money if I haven't gone to the window myself.
That makes two of us, and I'll say the three things that I've tried to isolate. I know we hit on a bit. The Bengals, I'm in agreement with you, want to do a little bit more digging there. And team totals under for two dogs that I think will have struggles moving the football in Minnesota and Houston, but much like yourself, have not gone to the window yet and feel it's reckless advising if we tell people to plunk down their hard-earned money before you and I are invested in these games. For Payne Insider, you can follow him on Twitter, at Payne Insider. I'm Todd Furman. You can follow me there as well, at Todd Furman. Follow our producer, Sam, at SP Shoot, and our weekly guest, Dave Mason, at Dave Mason, B-O-L. Best of luck with all your wild card playoffs investments, whether they be sides, totals, props, or anything else that catches your eye. We'll be right back here with you next week to preview for what should be outstanding divisional matchups, hopefully with a little bit more conviction and some opportunities to get down early. Best of luck this weekend, and hopefully we'll see you at the window.